Good evening, everyone, and thank you for listening tonight. We really appreciate you making the time for the show, and we have a wonderful, enlightening guest tonight. Anna Maria Hemingway is a PhD candidate and a member of the International Association of the Near-Death Studies. She has written a book of a modern-day peril to help people come to terms with death and appreciate preciousness of life. The book title is Practicing Conscious Living and Dying, Stories of the Eternal Continuum of Consciousness. Her website is thepracticeconsciousliving.com. Tonight we are giving away one of these wonderful books with a question later in the show. Now this is a value of $25 retail. I really enjoy this book, and I am welcoming Anna Marie to the air, and I thank you very much for being on the show.
Great to be with you.
Oh, it's wonderful. Now, how exactly did you come up? You've just been studying near-death experiences for some time. How did you get your interest in it?
Well, at the time I was doing a course in conscious dying, and I started to hear about near-death experiences and actually then came in contact with somebody who'd had a near-death experience, met him and was talking to him and became very curious and totally engrossed in what he was telling me. And I guess that was actually what set me off. In fact, the man in question, Reuben Beckham, happens to be the first story in my book. And that's how it first started.
Now, the book is basically a collection of different experiences appreciating death as well, living and the dying, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how did you come about to, how did you select what stories to be in this wonderful book?
Well, I didn't actually select the stories. Once I decided to write it, the stories just sort of came my way. Somebody would tell me of someone they knew or someone would contact me, and it just sort of flowed and the stories came in. So I didn't actually really go out looking for any of them.
So why do you think death is often viewed as the ultimate failure?
Well, I think in the society that we live in, we've become so accustomed to prolonging life, to really viewing this existence that we have in this very materially driven society, certainly in Western cultures, as being the ultimate reality. So we've become very disconnected from the fact that actually death is part of our life cycle, a very natural part of our life cycle. And so, you know, we look to medicine and cosmetic surgery and all sorts of other things to just prolong life. And so I think when the inevitability of death does enter our lives, which for all of us at some point it does, either we lose someone close to us or, you know, through our lifetime we do encounter death. We're very unprepared and unable to deal with it. And I think all we tend to see is the grief and trauma that surrounds it, which of course is a huge part of that process. Mm-hmm. But I think we fail to see that death can actually teach us so much about life. And I sort of started writing this book after my own experience with my mother's dying process, in which, you know, I went through all those painful phases, but there were moments of real beauty and clarity and such profound insight that I realized that death has something very important to teach us about living life. And I realized how many people, you know, had to deal with this on a daily basis and yet had no sort of tools or references. It's not something we discuss or we're taught about or learn how to deal with. So my idea really was compiling this book of 20 or so different stories with people that have been involved in some way in the dying process, either through a near-death experience or being with somebody that was in the dying process or losing a loved one or even after-death communication, and actually bringing out all the other things that they experienced and, you know, that were very inspirational and life-transforming.
So what are you, how would you suggest people embrace the dying process to help us really enjoy life more?
Well, I think if we accept that our, you know, our earthly time is actually limited in some way, we really tend to appreciate, you know, the beauty and preciousness of our lives with all its ups and downs and incredibly beautiful moments. But also, you know, we can learn a lot from being with people that are actually making that transition from earthly existence, if you like, by seeing how, you know, death really strips us down of everything that we think may be important at the time, but, you know, in this process we realize what's really, really important. And often, you know, we have very profound insights and we realize that, you know, as a person that is making this transition sheds this sort of outer identity or this perhaps more ego-based existence. And I think that we can find a place where we can be our most authentic human selves, where all that's left is what really matters, perhaps our, you know, real love for a person or our understanding of this journey perhaps that we can take with them. And all the information that perhaps we hadn't, you know, even thought about before comes into our lives. It's a very altering place, I think.
Oh, most definitely. I've talked to many people recently who have lost, you know, a father or a mother, and it's like many of them knew ahead of time, that, and they were able to really express everything that they needed to say before they went, and get the closure with certain people who they had an argument with, and they just wanted to make sure that argument was null and void before they left, which I think is beautiful. But the person who told me about this actually was part of the journey and actually called and said, this person needs to see you, and was able to get them together so they could get that clarity and that closure.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very beautiful moment for them.
Well, I think so. And, you know, when we tend to think about death for most of us, you know, we go into that place where the emotion is really all very negative. You know, we suffer great grief. We really are going to miss the presence of somebody that means a lot to us in our lives. And, you know, grief is a very intense period for people in that bereavement state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we tend to forget, you know, the things that you just mentioned, that perhaps sometimes we can be the most honest with somebody that we've ever been in our lives, or we can heal estrangements and bitter rifts that have gone on for years. And that I think, you know, one of the things that became very apparent to me as I collected these stories was that what happens during this process, which, you know, a lot of people actually talk about afterwards, it seems strange, but sometimes people will come from being with somebody in this process and they'll use words like, you know, beautiful, peaceful,
mm-hmm.
you know, profound, and that those are perhaps not the words that one might imagine somebody describing that scene
right.
to be in, but that, like everything else, death has another side to it. You know, it has this side where I believe that grace makes its presence felt. And it can be a very healing and very transformative period as well.
Yes, and the same person had a phenomenal experience at the time of death. I mean, really feeling the presence of the divine there, and knowing that his father is going to be in a very good place. It was just more of a joyful experience. Not, yes, he misses his father, but at the same point, he understands his dad's with him and lives in his heart and is in a very good place. And that was just really reassuring for him to see the whole process that his father went through. And it really, even just listening to him, really lightened things up for me on the process of dying.
Well, I think so. And I think one of the things is that if we can overcome our fear, you know, that most people have as a barrier of really being fully present in this kind of a situation, you know, there are so many times at this time of transition that deathbed visions take place. And, you know, I've written quite a lot about that in my book because, again, it's sort of another sign that there is something else going on. And, you know, many people put down a lot of these things to be hallucinations or the fear of death, you know, overcoming it by the dying brain and all sorts of things. But the fact is that, you know, many people do have apparitions, if you like, or dreams
right.
in which a deceased relative or a family member definitely comes to tell them that, you know, they are there to help them and to accompany them on making this transition. And it's not only, you know, the dying person that actually can witness these apparitions. There are a number of cases where hospice workers themselves have actually encountered these same energies. So I think what I wrote Practicing Conscious Living and Dying about was to open up, you know, all of these things that can take place and to give people a sense of being perhaps more curious and really paying attention. You know, perhaps if you have somebody with you that is making this transition and they do tell you something, you know, along these lines, that it's important to listen to what they're saying, because not only certainly can you see with the person themselves, it makes a huge amount of difference, but it can also bring us into this, you know, altered state of understanding or awareness of what's actually taking place at this time, more than just the death of the physical body.
Right. And as you're saying this, the other thing that is popping in my head is the shamanic death, and which is just really overcoming all your fears through experiencing the fears face on. And it is literally a death. And it's been a process that's been around for thousands of years. And it's honoring the dying and the cycle of life and death, and knowing that there is a rebirth after death.
Well, I think so. Yes, and, you know, this is another point. I sort of have bought into a lot of text into the between these stories, because I wanted to illustrate exactly, you know, what you just said, which this isn't a new thing. We have so many ancient texts like the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, all sorts of mythic stories. We have so much to sort of reconfirm what we can experience at these times, you know, that's been handed down for centuries, which really, really accentuates all the time this cycle of birth, death, and rebirth. And I think that we are given plenty of signs that this certainly may very possibly be the case. And we can come into contact with them very much in this period of one making a transition, or certainly, you know, from a near-death experience where people have been determined clinically dead and have gone on in another form of consciousness and have then come back into their physical body with certainly, you know, very similar imagery that may well appear in deathbed visions. So these things aren't sort of like separate things, and that includes after-death communication and, you know, very much other psychic or paranormal activity. It seems to be more that we, at this period, are able to lift this veil and peer into, you know, what possibly may be, or certainly appears very much to be, a continuum of consciousness following the death of the physical body.
Well, how common is a near-death experience? I mean, they've been studying it now for some time. Do they have some kind of understanding of how often this happened, or is there a specific almost pattern that they occur?
Well, I would say probably that, you know, perhaps a near-death experience somewhere over the world may take place, you know, every day or every week. Certainly we hear a lot more about them now, but I think, again, it's important to remember that, you know, one of the earliest accounts of a near-death experience was from the 8th century. So, again, we're not talking about something new. We hear about it more, perhaps because people are more willing and able to talk about their experience now. And certainly a lot of research is being done. But I think probably the near-death experience has been with us, you know, through the history of mankind.
And how important are these stories, really? Do you think it's just to comfort us to know that it does continue afterwards?
Well, I think on many levels the stories are very important. I think story, perhaps, is, you know, the greatest way that we relate to each other. We can listen to somebody else's experience, and it then has an effect on us, and perhaps we start looking at something or other a little differently. And the stories that near-death experiences bring back, I think, you know, on the one hand, we have medical and scientific research undertaken to, you know, prove whether this happened or that happened, which is, you know, which is fine. I think everyone is curious to know perhaps more in that area. But I think, you know, the really important thing about the near-death experience is that the survivors return transformed. They have a different way of looking at life, of leading their lives, of often spiritual belief systems, an unshakable belief in a continuum of consciousness following physical death. They lose fear of the dying process totally. Many return with very enhanced abilities like healing or psychic or some kind of ability that perhaps they didn't have beforehand. And their lives are very different, so something extraordinary has taken place.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I personally know. And that actually is bringing me to the question for the book, but I will wait on giving that question now. Do you have a favorite story in here that really touched you after you wrote it? Go, wow, that really made a profound difference in your life, other than the one about your mother, which is very touching, beautiful.
Well, I have to say that I loved all the stories, but I think that the ones that touched me most were Peter's story, Wilma's story, and Joanne's story. And I could go on, but I think that they stood out very much because they have, you know, there's something very, very powerful in those stories. And I think they take people into the place where they actually connect with the part of themselves that can relate to these stories and what these people are doing out in the world. And that, you know, more than anything, perhaps, how when one finds your own unique mission and something to do in this lifetime and that it has a benefit for other people, extraordinary things can take place. And it so happens that You know, all of these people receive this kind of inspiration through some involvement with death or the dying process, and had, again, very transformative experiences.
Yeah. Now, Wilma, actually, the Wilma story, it involves dogs and animals. And actually, her starting a very important dog foundation. It's the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation that helped out with the 9/11 disaster, tragedy. And it really changed her life to see how devoted these dogs were in going into dangerous situations to help people and find, so people could really get closure with the situation the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're reading these stories, I mean, and you wrote this story, did you feel like you should get involved with every single thing that they were doing mentioning? I mean, I literally wanted to just go donate money to this foundation because it is doing such extraordinary work.
Well, yes. I mean, part of the reason that I wrote the stories was because I wanted to tell these people's stories. And actually, you know, I wanted to evoke a response within people. I think Wilma's story is very important because, you know, as human beings, I think we're very disconnected from nature and the other life forms that actually, you know, share the planet with us. And perhaps, as Wilma says, respect for the animal kingdom, you know, is something that one often rarely hears now in respect to the animal kingdom. But that actually Wilma's story really illustrates that we're all here together, you know, and that by working cooperatively, by respecting other life forms, we can actually share in a symbiotic exchange. And, you know, as Wilma shows in her story, these dogs are often rescued from the most appalling situations, and they bond with their firefighter handlers. And this relationship between the firefighter and the dog may well be the most important relationship in that firefighter's life. And there's a bonding that takes place that, as Wilma says, you know, supersedes sometimes perhaps anything else. And, you know, the dogs, with the respect from the handler, they actually have a new life, and their new life is saving other people. And so I feel that her story is very important because her mission really was to rescue abandoned dogs, but not just to rescue them, to actually, you know, give them a life. And that life actually happens to really, you know, help other human beings. And so her story, I think, really functions to bridge that gap between, you know, the fact that I think the human being tends to think, well, we're apart from everything else and we can control it. And, you know, I think this story very much shows that actually we are not apart. We have become very disconnected. But if we come back to that place where we are all connected, and if, you know, Wilma's philosophy was shared by everyone, the world and the way we treat animals and ourselves would be a very different place.
Yes, and as you're saying that, I'm reminded of, I recently was at a dog park opening which was dedicated to a police dog that lost its life in pursuing a criminal. And it really was very touching to hear the handler of this dog that, I mean, he was in tears. He was still missing this dog. And the poor tragedy happened over a year and a half ago. And he was still very much moved by the loss of this dog and also by the support that he was getting from this story and the loss of this dog. And they've gotten a lot more support for that program through this tragedy, but the dog gave its life.
Yes.
And it was beautiful to be there and to see all the support that they were getting and the dedication of this park.
Mm-hmm.
So,
beautiful.
It really is. People are beginning to realize that there's more than life than just the dollar, hopefully, and that they really need to appreciate the person next to them when they're around.
Well, I think so, and I think all of these stories are very much aimed. I mean, I have people actually that, you know, call or email me and tell me, you know, the effect that some of these stories have had. And I think, you know, Wilma's story actually is one of the ones that many people weep when they read it, but not out of complete sadness, but because they seem to rediscover a connection, and it's that connection, you know, that almost evokes that kind of emotion. And I think that, you know, we've lost that connection. And I think that, you know, the profundity and the enormity of going through this process of being with somebody in a transitional phase changes us so much. And, you know, Wilma started this organization after being at the Oklahoma bombing and, mm-hmm. you know, witnessing what was actually going on. And it just had such a profound effect on her. And one of the other stories that I like very much is Peter Samuelson, who heard of a dying boy who had an inoperable brain tumor. And the little boy had a secret wish that he told somebody, which was that he wanted to go to Disneyland, and his mother couldn't afford to send him. And Peter heard about this, and he actually flew the little boy over to Los Angeles with his mother, and for 3 weeks took him everywhere, you know, everything that the little boy could have wanted in this last 3 weeks of his life. And as he said, even though his illness was so far advanced, he rallied up, you know, for all of this. And shortly after, he returned back to England where he came from, and he died. And Peter was so moved by this that he thought, well, if I could do this for one child, perhaps I could do it for many others. And as a result, he set up the Starlight Foundation, which is now a huge organization that does that very thing, you know, grants seriously ill children their wishes.
It's a beautiful program. It is really a beautiful program. And I do want to go ahead and give that question for this beautiful book so you can read all these wonderful stories here. And the question is, what air guest had experienced NDE and came on to the show and talked about their experience? So I would like to know the guest name who was on the show, and this person spoke about near-death experience. And if you would like to call BBS Radio, we will be happy to give you that book. And the number is 877-876-5227. And if you're in Canada, it is 888-815-9756. I also want to invite, if you have a comment or a story you want to share, please call in and let us know your experiences on this subject. But then again, right now, if you would like to win a copy of this beautiful book, the question is, what guest on the show talked about near-death experience? So, this book is, we have a caller. Hello, caller.
Hi, this is Brant from Minnesota.
Hi, Brant. How are you?
Good. I think I have the answer to your question.
Okay, and what is that?
Is it Peggy Porter?
Yes, it is.
Ah.
You got it.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. Do you have any stories that you'd like to share while you're on the air?
Not necessarily, but I'm enjoying the conversation. It's very intriguing.
Well, thank you very much for calling, and we will get you that book. I believe Don will ask you for the information, and we'll make sure you get that book.
Okay, thank you
very
much.
All right, thank you, Brent.
Yep, have a good night.
You too. Anna Marie, how long did it take you to get all these stories together?
It probably took me a couple of years to get the stories together. I interviewed all the people that were in the book. And, of course, there was a tedious task of transcribing all the tapes and then, you know, actually writing the stories, keeping the people's own voice and experience, but actually, you know, making them into a story form that would be interesting for people to read. And I got a very diverse section of different stories. The book's actually split up into three sections. The first section is near-death experiences and a history and, you know, quite a lot of information for people who want to know more or understand more. And then five actual real-life stories, one of which, you know, I think people are very fascinated in knowing that Larry Hagman himself had two NDE-like experiences. And I think his story is very important because, you know, to the outer world, it would appear that he'd got everything that a person could possibly want, you know, wealth, power, fame. But he still had this, you know, very inner quest to try and find out more about the meaning of life. And in his own experience, you know, he came away having found that place and also really echoing, as it were, everything that most NDE survivors describe, which is, you know, what's important in life, that life certainly continues after death of the physical body, and this change that takes place in the way that one lives life. And certainly Larry is, you know, a good example of this because he actually spends a lot of time now raising money for charitable causes that he's very firmly committed to. And so the stories were, you know, very diverse and very different. But actually, I think all of them really give the same message. They're all very much to do with this reconnection, certainly with nature and the natural rhythms. Most of these people have come away with those kind of insights and, you know, very inspirational. So they just came along by themselves, and I guess I just compiled them.
Well, it really, the whole book just flows very, very well.
Thank you.
It's just really, you know, it was very interesting. I actually read this book when I was on a shamanic retreat. And
oh.
It's like I'd go do some journeying on a shamanic basis and then come back and read one of these stories, and the connection with what I'd gone through and in the book was just almost, it was eerie how well they just connected really well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a real compliment for what I was up to. So what is the main thing, I mean, do you feel that people are, from this book, would just learn that they need to appreciate every moment of every day in a different way than they have, in a more congruent way?
Well, I think most people, you know, if they were asked, you know, if they were given the question, do you really feel that you've really maximized on your potential in this lifetime? You know, have you achieved perhaps what you feel you should be doing? And a lot of people, you know, like in the near-death experience, for example, people have a life review. And this seems to be one of the most important features. They actually see their lives laid out before them. Mm-hmm. And many of them, although it seems that there's no blame or, you know, or chastisement for the, if you like, for the life they've lived, but many of them look at this life and they see, you know, how they've acted towards other people, what they've done in their lives. And for many, there's this idea that one of the stories, you know, Tiffany's story, she says very clearly, you know, I realized I wanted to come back and make a better movie. And I think this is, you know, this is one of the central messages that, you know, like we said earlier, people get so very bogged down in this very materially driven society. And I think we tend to forget that actually we're part of a planet that is out, you know, in the universe, actually. We're no different when we look at the moon and we see it out there in the sky. We're not really just down here looking up there. That is what the Earth is doing. We are on a planet that is in infinite time and space. And I think even by, you know, looking at things from that perspective, there's a shift in this idea that there, you know, life is very different from perhaps what we think it is all about. And all of these stories and all of the information, I think, that I tried to put in the book is really about if we become curious and pay attention, certainly, to all the things that we've talked about. And that includes something that we haven't really talked about, which is after-death communication, which, again, is very commonplace and perhaps, you know, dismissed by many people, but certainly so many people experience it. And I have myself, and I'm sure, you know, many of your listeners mm-hmm. and you yourself have, that, you know, there is this kind of inner sense of there's something else going on, of this continuum all the time, this movement, and that, you know, if we really, really get back in touch with that, I think it certainly does change the way that we live our lives, because perhaps we start to become a little less ego-based on, you know, what I need, what I want, what I've got, what I haven't got, into perhaps what's more real, what's enduring beyond that. I mean, we even get these messages, you know, through the Bible or all sorts of texts, you know, you can't take it with you. That's not going to actually give you some deep, you know, inner feeling of everything really being okay. It's a very outer manifestation, and it might make being miserable slightly better if you're doing it in some mansion with some wonderful swimming pool and everything around you that you want, but actually, that's not filling that place that really wants to be nurtured and fed and really connected to perhaps what's more important than those things.
And I have actually done some of the communication with someone who's passed, and I get that during my psychic readings. I do it quite a bit for people who they want to make sure they're okay. And what's amazing is I do a lot of pet readings, and it's amazing how many people want to make sure their dog, their cat, is doing okay on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful that people do care, that, you know, and I recently was talking to one woman who the dog kept saying, "I'm okay, I forgive you, you didn't do anything wrong." And she had to give the dog away because of circumstances out of her control
mm-hmm.
to someone else. And it just was tearing her apart that she had to let the dog go and needed that forgiveness
mm-hmm.
and that it's okay. So I do think very strongly that the afterlife communication really does help people get closure and understand that there is something on the other side and they're all doing okay.
Yes, and, you know, one of the reasons that I included the section on after-death communication is for that very fact. speaking of animals, you know, there are many, many cases where it'll be an animal that meets the person on the other side or can come through in some way. And, you know, if we go back to that place of us all being connected, why wouldn't that essence of whatever it is, whether we want to call it spirit or soul or whatever, that essence or that energy, why wouldn't an animal, you know, come through just as much as a human being might? But I think, you know, that we get very subtle signs. Certainly whenever I talk to people, I ask them questions like, well, you know, did you notice anything or did something happen? And sometimes they'll sort of look a bit pensive, but very, very often they will then start to relate something that happened. And I think, you know, if we don't talk about things like that, people don't volunteer the information unless they feel that, you know, the question is going to be, you know, well received and that they have permission almost to discuss these things. But as far as my research goes, you know, whether people believe in all of these various things that we've been talking about, which, you know, as I stated earlier, I think they're all part of the same thing. You know, they're just penetrating that veil, just seeing beyond in some way. They're not really separated. You know, my question often to people is, well, have you experienced something in your life that has had a real profound effect on you and that you can't rationally explain? And to date, I haven't met anyone that said, no, I haven't. And I think that sort of goes very much towards indicating that we all do have these experiences and these glimmers of there being something else and something else happening, you know, in our lives. So we do have that connection within us. And that rather than, you know, dismiss all these things, that being curious about them and, you know, learning more and hearing other people's experiences can be, you know, really very, make us a lot more aware.
Oh, most definitely. And Peggy Porter, the guest that was on, really had several experiences of traveling to the other side and coming back. And this woman's essence, her presence, is very calm, very steady. She's very, very in tune to what's going on, and one of the most positive people who has had a lot of tragedy in her life, yet she's at total peace with the whole situation. And even though she lost somebody very dear to her and was grieving for some time, she also knows and gets signs still from this person that he's okay and she's doing great. And it's very comforting for her to know that presence is there. And I do think a lot of people are now willing to admit, yes, there is that guardian angel. There is the mother, the father, the grandfather who had such an impact on their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they really are acknowledging that their presence is still with them, that they might not be here physically, but they're definitely with them in many, many ways.
Yes, I think so. And I think that, like I said, you know, we all experience these things, you know, very much of the time. Certainly when we've lost somebody, I mean, many people will say things like, oh, I just suddenly smelt their perfume, you know,
mm-hmm.
halfway up the stairs, or I just had a sense of them just being, you know, with me, or I had an after-death communication in a dream, and it was so real that I knew for sure that, you know, the message I received was authentic. And I think that, you know, people say, well, why would that happen? And obviously one of the reasons is because, you know, the person probably wants their loved one to know that they're still around, that, you know, they're still in touch with them, and that it is a very comforting experience.
Yes. And I know a few people that they think of somebody and then all of a sudden that person's favorite song starts playing on the radio.
Exactly, yes.
Or they find a penny or something that reminds them of that person. And it's wonderful that people are feeling safe enough to really acknowledge the presence. And I think that's a big shift in the consciousness overall, is people are truly accepting the facts and willing to admit, yes, there's something else. And even doing the studies, the research that's going on in the near-death experience and some of the paranormal experiences that are going on is getting a lot more press and a lot more, you know, they sensationalize it in some ways, but the information is out there, and overall it's pretty good that they're doing something. I mean, even BBS Radio, I have to applaud them for, you know, being willing to step out of the box and expose many people to all the different possibilities out there. So I commend Dawn and Doug for what they're doing. They're doing a wonderful job.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's very interesting to see how people, you know, are very, very interested in all of these topics and are curious and do want to know more. And like I said, I don't think these are new things that we're talking about. You know, we have so many sacred texts. We have so many stories and myths that all tell us the same message. I mean, we even have our natural world that's in a perpetual state of, you know, birth, death, and rebirth, that we have many, many signs to tell us that this information, you know, really is verified by our own experiences when we do have them.
Yes, and you point that out with each chapter starting with something from Socrates or Plato, and it really is showing the length that these issues and these situations have been around, and you really have picked some beautiful quotes from them to start each section in the book.
Yeah, and I use Plato partly because I love, you know, the fact that what an amazing guy to have lived all that while ago, but certainly one of the reasons was because, you know, Plato does tell a near-death experience. The myth of Ur that he closes his famous republic is the myth of Ur is a near-death experience. So, again, you know, we're not talking about something new here. We're talking about something that actually has been recorded and understood perhaps since time immemorial, really. We're just reconnecting now with the same stories, and perhaps more so because we have more people having this experience and more ready and open to share their experiences with other people.
Yes, there's many wonderful things from Plato. Be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a harder battle, and it really is. It's just wonderful, just common sense things that you need to be a little more compassionate to the people around. And the other one that I really enjoyed reading, which I wholeheartedly agree, is a dog has the soul of a philosopher.
Yes.
It's they're very, very well done, chosen ones. And dogs, to me, have always been the teacher of unconditional love. They're one of the best teachers we have around.
I think so. And it was very interesting to me that, you know, I managed to find, without very much difficulty, a quote from Plato that went with every single story. So,
yes.
Again, it seemed, you know, it seemed like divinely inspired that Plato should be very much a part of my book.
Oh, and he definitely was most likely looking over your shoulder and guiding you in some way to really reiterate what he said so long ago, that the near-death experience and death overall is really a celebration in many ways, and it's just a rite of passage.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, I think that really, you know, holding that place that, you know, we are in this perpetual continuum ourselves of change, you know, really does make an impact and a difference in the way we live our lives. And, you know, I kind of think that perhaps, you know, the near-death experiences now, you know, so many of them are really almost like an army of people living in a higher sense of consciousness, and that they really, you know, do have examples of life being lived a little differently and are a great inspiration to everybody else.
Yes, and I was just reminded that even the name of the show, Abstract Illusion, was given to me by my deceased grandfather in a dream. So I have to thank you, Grandpa, because he wanted me to help communicate the wonderful things that are going on and help promote healers and musicians and artists because of the wonderful self-expressions that is out there and what they're doing to change the world in a positive way. So it's very interesting that because of that communication, I totally changed my whole life in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very profound, and it was wonderful to, and I still hear his laugh every once in a while, so I know I'm on track.
Yes. Well, what a wonderful thing to have in your life.
Oh, most definitely. And he is still, I don't even want to put him in past tense because he's still very much alive in my heart and in my life. So it's wonderful. And our time is running short, Anna Marie. And are you working on any other projects coming up with this, or is there any other plans that you wish to do in respect with this book?
Well, I'm working on another book, which is about consciousness and how we can access, you know, higher states of consciousness right now. I focused this one on one particular topic because I felt that it was really a topic that people, you know, the topic of death and immortality is really a topic that, you know, perhaps needs to be really brought out right now. And there isn't really very much, I think, that, you know, is of help that is in the same, you know, the same way that I've written this book, which is, you know, I think you would agree, not a somber, academic, you know, heavy going book. It's actually, I think, you know, very inspirational, and I felt very guided to write it. So I'm really doing as much as I can right now to promote it, because I think that it really has a powerful message for people, and that when they read it, you know, they do seem to have a very good response.
Well, I thank you very much. It has been an honor to have you on. I wish you all the best. And I want to also thank the listeners for listening tonight, and congratulations to Brent for winning the book. I also want to mention that last week's guest, Christina Keen and the Goddess Sophia, are having a special on their website for the 3-CD set. It is $7 off the single price. So if you go to ChristinaSophia.com and go to the store, you will be able to get a great deal on that set. It's a really wonderful set. I also want to remind you, if you want more information, to go to Anna Maria's website is PracticingConsciousLivingAndDying.com. Until next time, we have a wonderful psychic author coming on. I'm hoping that you gain new insight and inspirations with each breath of air. Many blessings and good night.